Cool. I'm Kyle, and I'm the student pastor here at Crossroads. And we're continuing in a series this morning. It's been powerful. It's been really awesome, and I'm excited for what God has in store for us this morning. Really, I think it's going to be really good. But if I'm going to be honest with you, it scares me a little bit. And it doesn't scare me in the sense to where if someone jumped out and you were instantly, like, terrified. Like, this one time, Cassie and I, we were engaged at the time, and I swore I had the most brilliant idea, and I was being the best fiancé ever. We were sitting in the car, and she had to go home still. She lived about 45 minutes away. But she was, like, dozing, and I had this ingenious idea that I was going to wake her up by screaming at the top of my lungs. And I thought, this is so good. I'm literally the best boyfriend ever. And so that was going through my mind. I kid you not. And so she's sitting there. She's like, I don't know, I'm going to do this. Dozing, head's nodding. And so I yell at the top of my lungs, literally as loud as I can. And she jumps and instantly starts bawling. She's like, why would you do that? And I felt like such a loser. I felt so terrible. But in the moment, I literally thought it was the best idea ever. So I'm not talking about that kind of scare. I'm talking about the kind of scare, and I need you to play along with me. So if you could close your eyes. Picture you're camping in the woods, okay? You're in the middle of the woods, you're camping, and it's nighttime, all right? You're in your tent, and then all of a sudden you start to hear, okay, so that kind of scared. Not where you're instantly terrified, but you know within the next 15 to 20 minutes, you're going to die. Okay, so that kind of scared, and I'll explain what I mean in a moment. But we're in a series that's called If God's So Good. And week one, Pastor Craig kicked it off, and he posed the question, if God's so good, then why are there so many rules? Why do I have to fit into this perfect box of a cookie-cutter Christian and fit into that mold? And then last week, Pastor John continued the series with, if God's so good, then why do bad things happen to good people? And it's been really powerful. If you're just now tuning in, I want to encourage you to go onto the website and listen to the podcasts, because really, it's been a deep series to this point. But it scares me, and the reason why is because if I were God, I wouldn't handle that question all that good. Right? If I'm God in heaven, I'm thinking, if God's so good, okay, I see how it is. After all I've done for you, that's what's up. Boom! How you like me now? And I would put his arms where his legs used to be, and his legs where his arms used to be. But like, if God's so good, how you like me now? That's what you get. But luckily, I'm not God. And we can ask these tough questions. And I'm super thankful that I serve a senior pastor who, first of all, gives me the opportunity to share, but second of all, that isn't afraid to tackle the tough questions. Because we could talk about peace and joy and all that fluffy stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that. Please don't hear me wrong. It's good to talk about those things, but if I'm being real this morning, I know I'm not the only one, where we're thinking at times, okay, yeah, God, I get it, your peace, whatever, but God, if you're so good, then why do I feel like every time I make a decision, I'm breaking one of your holy rules and I'm never measuring up? God, I get it. We can talk about peace. I know, joy, whatever. I need to choose joy. But God, if you're so good, how is it that kids can be molested by their parents while at the same time that parent is racking in a six-figure salary and planning their next island vacation? God, if you're so good, where in my hell are you? And are you even listening? Why should I pray when you don't answer, right? And so we're going to talk about that this morning. We're going to look at the book of Joshua, and we're going to talk about three different reasons why I think people stop short, lose faith, and quit praying when they feel like God isn't answering. It's going to be awesome. And if you're taking notes this morning, you're going to see in your program you were handed, there's blanks there. I don't have fill-ins for you, and the reason is because I personally get distracted by the fill-ins. I turn it into a game, like I try to guess the next fill-in. And so I don't have fill-ins for you, so just take notes on what you think is good and leave out what you don't. So we're going to talk about three reasons why I think people lose faith, stop short, quit praying when they feel like God's not answering, okay? So we're going to look at Joshua chapter 6, verse 1. All right? Joshua 6, verse 1. Now the gates of Jericho were securely barred. Okay. Before I get into it, I want to give you a little context. Now, at this point, the Israelites, they had been wandering in the desert for 40 years, okay? Until God then revealed to them a path into the promised land, the land that he had set aside for them. Now, in order to enter the promised land, they had to get past certain cities and nations that were hindering them from gaining access to God's land for them. And the first city that they came across was Jericho, okay? Now, Jericho, it wasn't a very big city, all right? It was a small city in comparison to other cities in that time. It wasn't very big, but Jericho had something that many cities didn't have during that time. And what Jericho had is it had heavily fortified, massive walls, okay? So here's Jericho, and these are the walls, massive walls. And this is Joshua, okay? So this is Joshua outside of Jericho. All right, so Jericho wasn't big, but it had massive, heavily fortified walls. We pick up in Joshua 6, verse 1. Now the gates of Jericho were securely barred because of the Israelites. No one went out and no one came in. And then when we look to verse 2 right away, there's something that takes place that I want us to notice. I noticed it. It's really interesting. We're going to talk about it here in a second. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men." So I'm not sure if you noticed it or picked up on it, but I noticed that in these two verses, God speaks in past tense about a battle that Joshua hasn't even fought yet. And only God can do something like that. And this morning, I want to remind you or let you know that God speaks in past tense about the battles you're currently fighting. That's his heavenly perspective on things in life. And still, we can know that and still stop short. We can still quit. We can still stop praying when we feel like God's not answering. And if I were to think of reasons why, the first one would be this. It's because our perspective is obstructed. Our perspective is obstructed. See, God in verse 2 says that, "See, I have delivered Jericho. I have delivered Jericho." Yet Joshua looks up, and what does he see? When we look at verse 1, he sees a heavily fortified city. So God says, "See, I have delivered Jericho." But Joshua sees walls and barriers. What do we do when what we see looks nothing like what God has said? Because Joshua saw walls and barriers, but God promised victory. And the crazy thing, when we look at it, it blows my mind. When we look at why Jericho even had the walls in the first place. Look back at verse 1. "Now the gates of Jericho were securely barred." Why? Because of the Israelites. And so the only reason the walls were high and the gates were locked is because the enemy was intimidated. The Israelites didn't need to be afraid, because the only reason they were facing the walls in their life was because the enemy was afraid. And I don't believe this message is an accident. I believe it's for me, and I believe God had a plan for it purposefully, because he knows that there's someone in here that is facing some intimidating walls. And he wants you to know that there's a promised land on the other side of those walls. And if you could trust in him and believe the promise he's given you, and know that he speaks in past tense about that battle, that those walls that you're facing, there's a promised land on the other side. And when you trust and focus on God's words, it shifts your perspective. It begins to give you a higher perspective and see over those walls and know that although what you look like, what you see is barriers, what you see are walls, God sees the outcome. And although you see unanswered prayer, you see silence, and you see abandonment, God promises victory and says, "If you have faith and trust in me, there's victory on the other side of those barriers." I believe that another reason people stop short and lose faith and stop praying is because the progress isn't obvious. the progress isn't obvious. I want us to imagine this story as if we've not heard it or unfamiliar with it. I don't know if you are familiar with the children's song that accompanies this story, but it goes, Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. First of all, it's kind of out of order because first the walls fell down and then Joshua fought the battle. But other than that, really, that song is a massive oversimplification of what really happened, right? I was watching this interview of a UFC fighter. His name is Vitor Belfort. And it was the interview took place a day after he had won in the ring and octagon, whatever. And the interview took place one day after he won. He had a victory. And the interviewer said this. He said, "You made that look easy. Really, it doesn't even look like you had been in a fight. In fact, to a lot of fans, it was disappointing because it went so quick and it didn't look like it took much effort." And I'll never forget his response because it shocked me. Vitor responded and he said, "I don't ever want to hear you say that to me again. Because what looked easy to you took me 6 months of training to get to look that way." And I wonder if Joshua heard that song, if he would have the same response. Joshua fought the battle of Jericho and the walls came tumbling down. If he heard that and he would go, "Wait a second. I don't ever want to hear you sing that song again." 40 years. 40 years of wandering in a desert. 40 years for someone else's lack of faith, I might add. 40 years. And then, when I'm about to enter the promised land, God has a meeting with me the day before and says, "Hey, before you get in, I want you to have 7 days of exercise." Where's that in the song, right? Where's that in the song? And get this, God's a master motivator, okay? He knows us intimately. He knows every detail about us. He knows how we work. And so he's a master motivator. And I'm thinking, okay, if God wants to set up the miracle in this way, he would want to motivate Joshua and the Israelites to keep going. Because really, it's a senseless act of obedience to have them march around the city a bunch to eventually shout the walls down, right? That's pretty unorthodox, would you agree? And so, and on top of it, there's the whole you can't see God thing, and so it's you're walking by faith and not by sight. And then on top of it, after you march around the city, you're not going to use a battering ram to knock the walls down, you're going to shout them down. And so I'm thinking, if I'm God, I'm going to want to motivate Joshua and his men to keep going, right? And so I'm thinking, okay, this is awesome. Each lap they make, I'm going to take a part of the wall down, right? Like, it'd almost be kind of like Tetris. Like, they take a lap, and then part of the wall comes down. Like, almost if every day 1/7 of the wall came down. Like, they took another lap, and then part of the wall comes down. And they took another lap, and part of the wall comes down. Took another lap, part of the wall comes down. Read the text, dude. That doesn't happen. Okay, for 7 days, nothing moves. Like, not a brick fell. Nothing. This is why I hate exercise. And if you like exercise, I hate you. And here's why. Because I want the progress of the work I'm doing to be made apparent immediately. Like, if I was doing a plank, and in the middle of my plank, my abs just started to pop. Like, pop, pop, pop. Like, every minute, just pop, pop. I could do a plank all day if I could see something. But we walk by faith and not by sight. And so what happens when you're walking? What happens when you're praying and nothing happens? I mean, that's the true question of faith. I would venture to say that most Christians don't pray more than 5 minutes a day. But if while you were praying, God answered your prayer, man, you would bump into stuff praying all day. Because we want a genie God that'll do what we want, when we want. But what happens when you pray and nothing moves? Can you keep praying if the wall doesn't move at all? Can you keep praying even if your situation doesn't change? Because it'd be real easy to pray if in the middle of your prayer, your son walked up to you and said, "Hey, Mom, I flushed all my drugs and I moved out of my girlfriend's place. We broke up and I'm ready to come to church with you every week." But it's when you pray and they're back in jail. And you pray and they're still sick. And you pray, and they still want the divorce. And I'm going, God, let me see just one brick fall. But day one comes, day one goes, not a brick falls. Day two comes, day two goes, not a brick moves. Day three comes, day three goes, nothing happens. And I'm going, why would God set the miracle up in this way? Why wouldn't he let them know that they're making progress? Like, letting them know, hey, what you're doing is working. You're not crazy. You're on the right track. I'm wondering why God would do that. And he shared with me, he said this, obedience is your responsibility. Outcome is mine. Obedience is your responsibility. Outcome is mine. Will you have the faith to trust God is working, even if it isn't? And I think we get so caught up and consumed with the battles that we want God to win for us that we don't realize that the most important battle is the one he wants to win in us. And so maybe you're in here circling this morning, and God wants to win a battle in you before he can win the battle for you. Because you see, it's in the wandering. It's in the wondering. It's in the weakness. It's in the, God, how much longer that our faith is developed. And just because your progress isn't obvious doesn't mean your faith isn't working. It doesn't mean that God isn't listening or doesn't care. God wants you to know this morning that the promise still stands. The promise still stands. I know some things have happened that have caused you to wonder, God, why aren't you answering my prayer? God, are you even listening? And he wants you to know that the promise still stands. The promise still stands. He meant what he said in Exodus 14:14, the Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Isaiah 40:29, he gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Isaiah 40:31, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Isaiah 41:13, for I am the Lord your God who takes hold of your right hand and says to you, do not fear. I will help you. So even if the wall is still standing between you and God's promise, God wants you to know, hey, don't quit. Don't give up. Even if you're on lap six, God's saying, if I am for you, who can be against you? The promise still stands. The promise still stands. He meant what he said. Up to this point, we've looked at this story through the lens of Joshua. We've even pictured what this would be like from the viewpoint of God. We've imagined what we would do if we were in God's position with this miracle. And now I want us to look at this story through the lens of, from a different perspective, really what I think is the most interesting, and that is of the Israelites, the people that Joshua is commanding. You see, we, for whatever reason, we think of this story in the same way every time. Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, the walls came tumbling down, and we assume that God shared his master plan with everyone, but he doesn't do that. When we look back at verse 2, it says, then the Lord said to Joshua, and then he proceeds to tell Joshua in verse 3, march around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing their trumpets. When you hear them sound a long blast on the trumpets, have the whole army give a loud shout. Then the wall of the city will collapse, and the army will go up, everyone straight in. God says to Joshua, okay, here's the plan. 6 days, nothing's going to happen. 7th day, boom, walls are going to fall down, you're going to go in, it's going to be great. But then we look at what Joshua tells the people, and there's a difference. You can tell Joshua's a guy because he leaves out some detail. And I want us to look at what Joshua tells the people versus what God told him. In Joshua verse 6, it says this, so Joshua, son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the ark of the covenant of the Lord and have 7 priests carry trumpets in front of it. And he ordered the army, advance, march around the city with an armed guard going ahead of the ark of the Lord. Notice what's not in that verse. Nothing about seven times, and nothing about walls falling down. So imagine you're a soldier, okay? You have your sword and your shield. You're ready to take Jericho, okay? You have it marked on your calendar. Monday, take Jericho. You're excited. You go out, you walk around the city, eat some lunch, go home. You get home, your wife says, "Hey, honey, how was your day? Did you take Jericho?" And every guy knows that when your wife asks how your day was, what she really means is, "Tell me the intricate details of your soul, and then ask me the same question, and then be prepared to listen for an unlimited amount of time, at the end of which you will then find out how your dentist stepson's best friend from 3 years ago had a dog that passed away." So you get home. Your wife says, "How was your day? Did you take Jericho?" Well, I think Joshua just wanted us to get a lay of the land, because today we just went for a walk, ate some lunch. But we got a good vantage point of the city, so tomorrow we're going to take Jericho. It's going to be good. Wake up, it's Tuesday, grab your sword, go out, go for a walk, come home. "Ooh, kids, daddy's home, a big strapping warrior. I'm so glad, baby, you're not hurt. How long did it take to take Jericho?" Well, it was interesting. We went for a walk, came home. In verse 14, it says, "So on the second day, they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. They did this for 6 days." Now, that doesn't seem very long, but when you're following a leader that might have turned into a lunatic, 6 days is a long time. Why march for 6 days? You know, I think it'd be easy to march for 6 days if on the seventh day you knew the walls were going to fall down. But they had no idea how long it was going to be like this. You know, I can pray really hard if I know something's going to happen. But some of you in here this morning, you're on lap two, lap three, year four, year five, year six. And you see, we end up stopping short, losing faith, because our perspective is obstructed. The progress isn't obvious, because the process is open-ended. How long, Lord? I mean, that's the burning question. God, I don't mind walking. I'll serve you. But I'm limping now. I didn't think it was going to take this long. God, I don't mind walking, but how long is it going to hurt like this? How many people are going to leave me? How long am I going to do this, God? I don't mind walking, but I got to know, is it even working? God, why am I walking around these walls? Why should I keep praying when nothing's happening? And God says, because. Because if I let you in on lap one, you would think it was your walking that got you in. You would think it was your shout that brought the walls down. So I'm going to need you to have a little faith to just take another lap. Just take another lap. Take another lap. Just take another lap. Here in Indiana, we have the Indy 500. We have today the Brickyard 400. So racing's a thing here. And if you watch the race on TV, there's a box that says laps left. And when there's one lap left, there's a guy that waves a white flag, letting the drivers know, hey, you're almost there, just one more lap. Wouldn't it be awesome if life had a laps left box? If life let you know, hey, you're almost there, just one more month. Just carry this weight just for one more week. Push through just one more time. But life doesn't wave its white flag. And so what happens instead is we wave our white flag and surrender and say, God, I can't do this anymore. God, I can't keep doing this. God says, good. Now you're ready. Because now you know that it wasn't because you walked so good that I came through. It's because he who began a good work is faithful to complete it. Just take another lap. Just take another lap. I believe that there are some people in here this morning that are ready to quit, that are ready to stop short. God, how much longer do I got to keep doing this? How much longer do I got to keep doing this, God? When is my kid going to get it? When's my husband going to come with me to church, God? How much longer do I have to go through this? Are they ever going to get better? Are you hearing me? You're ready to call it quits. And God brought me here this morning to remind you that he speaks in past tense about the battles you're currently facing. He wants me to encourage you to just take another lap. Have the faith to just take another lap. You're closer than you think you are. It's working more than you think it is. See, God's doing stuff that you can't see. God's doing stuff you can't see. If I could have the prayer partners come forward right now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take another lap. We're going to take just another lap. We're going to have the faith this morning to take another lap because I believe that some of us have been ready to quit. And if I can be blunt with you this morning, I would venture to say that these prayer moments oftentimes reflect a church that's quit after lap two or lap three, because oftentimes what happens out there becomes more important than what God wants to do in here. And so this morning we're going to take another lap. Some of you need to come forward and circle something in prayer this morning. You need to come up and pray with one of these prayer partners, and maybe you don't, and you just need to meet with God on your own, and that's fine. Maybe you need to drag someone up with you. I don't know, and I don't care. But I do know that God set this up because he knows that we just need to take another lap to keep going, to keep pushing, to keep walking, keep circling, even if it doesn't seem like it's working. And so right now, wherever you are, we're going to do a couple more things, but right now what I want you to do is, if you know that's you, you've been about to quit, you're tempted to stop because you're limping, it's hurting, and you don't see an end in sight. If that's you, I want you to step out right now. Don't worry about what everyone else is doing. Step out and come up here and begin to circle that in prayer right now. We're going to do this for a while. So if that's you, come out of your seat right now. Don't worry about what everyone else is doing. Come now and just take another lap. Just take another lap. God's doing more than you think he is. It's working more than you think it is. God's doing stuff that you can't see. So have the faith to take another lap. Just take another lap.